Blog Talk Radio.
We had a problem logging in today, and we will be in contact with Blog Talk Radio. This has been going on for 2 months, so I do apologize to our audience. We're going to get right into this show. It is an amazing show today. We actually have with us today Andrew Morrison of Small Business Camp. Oh, my God. Andrew is one of the most amazing today. Okay, everyone, we are back on now. It seems that we had a bit of an issue again. Okay, so as I said, we are having on our show Mr. Andrew Morrison. I am just going to bring on our co-host right away, Mr. Jay Logan. Jay, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing out there?
Well, I was doing well, Jay, until we had some problems getting in here on the show. But I think we're doing well. Mr. Morrison is waiting on for our show right now, and I'm ready to get started. Let's get that energy moving. Before we bring him on, I'd like to know how it's doing out there in San Francisco.
We had a bit of a chill storm out here. It was really cold, and a lot of people, unfortunately, are not with us due to the cold and thermal weather. So we're not used to this out here, but we're going to recover this weekend. It should be warming up here, and we'll be back to the old California ways, but it's been cold out here, Gil.
Well, I don't feel bad for you because you know that San Francisco is a little unfair to what New York has to go through, okay? You guys have great weather all year round.
Oh, okay. It's a different kind of cold.
I'm sorry. I can't feel too bad for you, Mr. Logan, because you're teasing us when it's at the end of your summer. You know what I mean? So that's a little unfair, okay? So we get to laugh a little bit this time. Well, Jay, we have a great guest on today, and I think without further ado, we should bring him on, don't you?
Yeah, I really think we should. Let's bring him on. Hey,
okay,
Gail.
Yes.
Yeah, also I have something to tell you after you leave. I have something to tell you. Christmas is almost here, and I just...
Well, we can talk about Christmas here. Moment because we have Mr. Andrew Morrison. Mr. Morrison, welcome to the show again. We're sorry for our technical difficulties here.
No problem. Thank you so much, Gil, for having me.
Oh, it's amazing having you, Andrew, and I think everyone will enjoy what you have to say. And, you know, we can't wait to hear about your trip to Botswana. We're just really excited about that one. So,
Thank you.
Without further ado, Andrew, you know, we'd like to first say thank you for being on the show again with us, and we'll call this part two. And we really have a fun-filled show today with you, Andrew, so we hope you'll have a lot of fun with us as well. So, Jay, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. How you doing, Jay?
I'm doing great.
Well, you know, Andrew, we know you have a company called Small Business Camp. And it stretches into many areas from small business to education with youth. Now, we have a lot of questions for you, so we don't want you to give too much away, Andrew. So one of the questions that I have for you is, how does Small Business Camp support entrepreneurs?
Well, it was created by an entrepreneur for entrepreneurs, and I was, you know, frustrated with the typical training programs. They really kind of left people motivated, and they left with a long laundry list of to-do items, but never really had the space to actually get them done. So I decided, let me kind of create a two-day, three-day weekend intensive program where entrepreneurs can walk in with simply an idea and leave with all the marketing tools that they wanted to create over a long period of time. So from a website to a press release, to building a team, to a business plan, a social media strategy, you know, a Facebook page, all the things that are entrepreneurs' to-do list, Small Business Camp provides the tools and also the space to get them done.
Wow, that's very interesting. What are some of the things a person should know before starting their business, Andrew? I know you heard that question before, so I'd like to ask you that. What are some of the things they should know before starting their business?
Well, first of all, I'm beginning to actually move away from the word business because it's used a lot, and the older I get, the less I even know what that word means. People need to destroy the word business and look at it as a project. A project has beginning dates and end dates. A project requires input. A project gives you output. A project is focused on solving a particular problem. And so the entrepreneurs out there who are listening right now, you should move away from trying to start a business to simply solving a particular problem. Because your number one search right now is you're searching for customers.
Andrew, I read your latest blog that speaks about entrepreneurs being shy about sharing ideas. And I know many entrepreneurs have been taking advantage of this when starting their ideas or ideas that have been used by others. What do you think about this, and what advice would you give concerning sharing ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I take a very different approach. In that, if God has really given something to you, really no one can take it away from you. I'm not saying to be foolish and you give away all of your intellectual property, but, realize the importance of trade secrets, because what's occurring is that people are limiting their ability to connect with other people because they're not really sharing their ideas. The article, the blog post I recently put up about opportunities in Botswana, I list probably a dozen ideas in three or four sentences. It gives people a sense of the direction of the idea, but it really doesn't give you a plan when it comes to implementation. So people need to learn how to describe ideas, but don't really necessarily give away the secret sauce, because by you describing ideas effectively, you can begin to attract investors and also team members.
Interesting.
Wow. That's interesting. You said something about describing ideas, Andrew. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, your idea should be focused on a customer. Many people want to jump to talking about their business. Well, on a fundamental level, people don't really care about your business. I mean, your business is run on customers. It was Tony Brown who said, everyone needs customers. Just try to buy your own product or service. I mean, so no one could buy their own product or service and still be in business. And so you have to really be focused on the customer. So before you jump to a conclusion talking about your business, talk about the customer needs. Talk about the customer frustrations. Talk about the customer problems. The closer and closer you get to the customer, the better understanding you have of his or her needs, the better you can tailor your business to meet those needs.
Wow. Well, Jay, I know you had a question.
Yeah, could you tell us a little bit about Small Business Weekend Camp? I was excited about that in Tampa, Florida. I'm freezing out here, Andrew, out in California, but you can really go to Tampa, Florida. Could you tell us about this coming up this winter?
Yeah, I probably do camps three or four times a year. Oftentimes I do them at the request of various organizations, but I have one coming up at the end of January, and it's in Tampa, Florida, because I did a speech in Tampa. I think it was in September, and people in there wanted to engage me at a more, intimate level. But, you come in on Friday, you can have an idea, and by Saturday afternoon, we help you kind of sort through your ideas and really kind of give you a step-by-step plan on how to make those ideas happen. Then by Sunday, it's our launch day. By Sunday, you should be launching something. You could be launching your e-book. I've helped people write, books on the weekend. You could be launching a new web page. It really helps to build your database. You can be developing a PR strategy. So everyone's experience is customized to where they are and also what's next for them.
That's great.
Wow.
That's great. Yeah.
That is
great.
One of the things I wanted to say is that, that week in camp really brings us into the next thing. I want to go into your trip a little bit, Andrew, if that's okay with you, about Botswana.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, you took a trip to Botswana. Would you share with our audience, you know, what you did while you were there? And don't give too much because Jay and I have some more questions, but we just want to know what you did while you were there, you know, like some of the fun things and what your primary reason was for going.
Well, you know, fun isn't in my vocabulary, but I went there in business. I didn't go there as a tourist. But let me take a step back. That fun is in my vocabulary because, you know, no one dies from working too hard. You die from a lack of relaxation. And so I'm able to, you know, develop a lifestyle where I'm always able to travel, support people, and also relax at the same time. But basically, I went there in conjunction with the ambassador to the U.S. from Botswana, Her Excellency Dr. Seretse, and also the Honorary Counsel to Botswana. His name is Robert Shoemake. In addition, Adrian Lance Lucas, who is the chairwoman of the Botswana American Chamber of Commerce. So they've been supporting me to do trips there and working with mostly the youth. And doing a series of seminars in the evenings that was free, and I concluded my trip there with a weekend intensive small business camp program. So it was a pretty packed day. I was warmly received by the media. I was on several TV shows, newspapers, radio, people stopping me in the mall. So there's definitely a hunger for entrepreneurial skill sets. I'm excited about being in the country.
Wow, you know, and I wondered, what was the country like in response to your small business camp there in comparison to being here in America?
Yeah, I mean, I really helped them to think through their business model because what occurs, and, you know, this is my first trip to the continent. I've been working in Nigeria as well, in that there's a great deal of textbook knowledge, you know, about running a business. But they need people like myself who can kind of come in and kind of give them the practical steps based upon where they are. So I really help people to really focus on their cash flow, focus on their launch strategy, not to get too caught up in technology. You know, there's several people who are trying to do mobile app concept for farmers and didn't even really realize that a lot of these farmers don't have electricity. They don't have smartphones. The internet access is spotty in those areas. So, you know, I really stress to them what Steve Jobs said. You know, Steve Jobs said that technology companies have lost billions of dollars being ahead of the customer adoption curve. And so I just really helped them not to get overwhelmed by what they, you know, read in the media or what's happening in the West and simply start from where their customers are.
Well, you know, the question I have for you is, you know, what opportunities, you know, being that you went to Botswana, this is not your first time to Africa, okay, what opportunities do you think exist in Botswana, Africa, and globally between countries? I happen to be, I love Western Africa, but I happen to truly, truly love Botswana, Namibia, South Africa most definitely. And, you know, those areas of Africa. But what opportunities do you think exist between the U.S., let's say, in Africa or Europe in Africa? What did you see while you were there on the ground that could happen in collaboration?
Well, first of all, I tell people that you really don't do business in Africa. You really do business in a country. And every country is different. And you don't even do a business in countries. You do business in cities. You do business in towns. You ultimately do business with people, like the old saying that says that, you know, all politics are local. So on a very real level, all business concepts are very local. And I've seen entrepreneurs try to translate a concept that worked in Ghana and try in Nigeria, and it fails because they didn't really tune it to the local customs. And so it's a laundry list of items, and the key for people is to do their homework, really understand what the needs are, be there on the ground for themselves, and just see how you can begin to add value. And so there's tremendous opportunities in the area of tourism, of jewelry manufacturing. There's a huge opportunity when it comes to hotels. when it comes to student housing. I'm looking at some student housing projects myself right now. Because Botswana is landlocked, there's a huge need to import more Western goods. So I'm looking at doing some beauty supply products. So basically, you have a hunger for Western goods. Anyone that can bring items into the country cost-effectively, you'll do very well.
Wow. Jay, I think you have some questions.
I want to ask, did you meet a lot of young people there?
Yes. I've developed a very deliberate strategy to work with the youth in conjunction with the business clinic and the faculty of business at the University of Botswana. You know, I've been constantly doing seminars. Average age is probably 25 to 30 years old. And they've got the energy, you know, they've got fire. They're extremely receptive to new concepts and ideas. And, they've got that hip-hop culture, that hip-hop swag. And so I go out partying with them, and, you know, I'm out there doing a Dougie, the whole bit. So they appreciate urban culture. They appreciate youth culture. They've got their own style and sense of sensibilities, and I've been encouraging them to be able to package that and also export their own culture to others around the world.
Well, that's interesting, and I was just wondering, like, do they have, like, a different type of energy than would be here in our states, United States here? Is there a different kind of hunger or aggressiveness? Does they have a high hunger level for education and the things that you brought there?
Yeah, I mean, Botswana is an interesting country. People often refer to it as a Switzerland of Africa because all African countries, they have the highest per capita GDP. They've got billions of dollars in foreign cash reserves because they produce nearly 70% of all the world's industrial quality diamonds. They have so much surplus cash that they're able to pay for everyone's education, you know, from kindergarten all the way to PhD. Healthcare is also free as well. So their success has also created a reliance to some degree on the government for support. And that's why the government has been looking for people like myself to really jumpstart that entrepreneurial spirit. So this is why it's so important that people understand that the local customs and politics and nuances of every country, because, you know, work in Nigeria was vastly different. And that country's, you know, cultural politics and history is different as well, which also creates other business opportunities.
That's interesting.
It's very interesting. You know, when you look at what you're sharing, you know, I have an extra question, Jay. You know, one of the things, and all of our travels, you know, Andrew, yours especially, Jay's and mine, we travel extensively, is that that's the one thing that people do not understand is that whether you're in Botswana or Zaire or Kenya or anywhere in Africa or in Europe, whatever, when we think about a continent, we sometimes think it's all the same. And, you know, I wanted to ask you, I believe that, you know, in doing business, you have to be respectful of the country, city, because even a city can have a different culture, and especially in Africa because it's from tribe to tribe. And even with different types of cultures in Europe or South America, would you agree or disagree that we have to be aware of those and sensitive to those when we are visiting those countries and if we have an intention to connect with the people there to do business?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be sensitive. At the same time, you have to know when to encourage them to be sensitive to your culture. So I've been very frank in talking to young people about stereotypes, and I tell them that, you know, you don't want to run from them. You want to be aware of them, and you want to be proactive in dealing with them. And so it's definitely a give and take. It's definitely a fine line that you have to walk. In Botswana and also in many African countries, relationships are value over transaction. And so they want to develop a relationship with you. They want to get to know you. Let's talk about your family and so on before we really begin to do business. And I've supported them in that cultural approach. And at the same time, I want them to appreciate the speed of business and also be able to incorporate some transactional conversations that will help them be able to reach their goals that much faster.
You know, I can actually agree with that. I mean, doing business with Africa, one of the things I've learned in certain cultures is that they have the African family meeting, which means that the party is invited to the family meeting to get to know the people in the family, and then they look at how can we develop business together, you know, things like that. And that's one thing that China does. They believe in relationships over transactional business. So one of the things I wanted to ask about was Teen Business Camp, okay? Would you share with our audience what Teen Business Camp is? And did you? I know you dealt with youngsters that were like youngsters. Oh my God, I'm not that old, but youngsters who are, you know, were 25 in Botswana. But did you deal with any teens in Botswana? And can you share with our audience what the Teen Business Camp is?
Yeah. So most of the work I've done with teens has actually been here in the U.S. So I have a small business camp for teens summer program I typically do for 2 weeks. And also I have a young CEO program, which I've done at various high schools across the country. And that's just really, you know, an outgrowth of my love for, you know, teens and just helping them begin to become a lot more engaged. There's so much research that shows that the young people who are disengaged just become a tremendous burden on society moving forward. And I'm able to engage them by simply first honoring their thoughts, honor their values, honor their creativity, and help them package that for profit. So I can go into any, you know, urban school, sometimes tell principals, give me the toughest classroom. And within 20 minutes, the kids are transformed because I'm helping them make money. I'm speaking back to them their music. I'm speaking back to them their culture. And so I'm making learning more relevant. You know, one young girl, I never forget, that, you know, fractions and percentages became more meaningful to her when I forced her to calculate what her 15% commission was. And it was amazing that at first she could not get it, but when her money was on the line, she began to calculate what her 15% commission was. That's an example of how all of us need to make sure that our homes and our everywhere we go becomes a classroom for especially teens.
And could you tell us a little bit more what the Teen Business Camp provides specifically for teens and for what it would do for the future also by having this?
So basically the Teen Business Camp, I've helped teens, you know, use online marketplaces to be able to take their creativity and sell it to the world. And they're like amazed. I mean, their minds are blown how they can take a slogan that their friends have been using, like Swagalicious. Had one group take the word swagalicious. We put the word swagalicious on a T-shirt. We used cafepress.com. We used Zazzle.com. And within a half an hour, they had their own online store. Within a half an hour, they were able to send out tweets to get people to make a purchase. Within a half an hour, they were able to take their baby pictures and put it on mugs and sell it to their grandparents. I mean, so it's really, you know, simple ideas like that that can be done in a classroom setting that really gets the kids excited.
That's ingenious.
Well, you know, Jay, I mean, it brings us back to what we did for our What Is Your Treasure campaign. We used Cafe Press and Zazzle, which was amazing.
Right.
You
it's
know,
just, it's wonderful that he's doing that.
Mm-hmm. Jay, did you have another question?
I have one more question. Now, you have a wonderful website, and I was looking at it. Yeah, I was looking at his website, Andrew, and I was wondering, you do things with MP3s. Now, how does that work? You download these MP3s, or they have a lesson on them? Could you explain that technique? Like if you send some.
Sure. So, you know, one thing I encourage everyone to do is to begin to brand their brilliance. I encourage everyone to become an expert, and the easy way to become an expert is to create a product. And your product could be an audio book, an MP3 file. Your product could be an ebook. You know, those are all simple concepts you can actually get done in a weekend. And the formula is for you to pick a niche, you know, finding people that have a problem and just talk about different ways to solve that problem and then simply package that and use that for sale, or you could simply use it as a way to build up your database. Many people are doing online, they're not effective at online marketing because they're building pretty websites, but they're not actually building their database. And I tell people that your database is a lot more valuable than simply having a pretty website. So I have an ugly website. Thank you for your comments about it, but I spent maybe $50 for the header, and everything is pretty much bland. It's simply a blog website. But that website, because of the way it's designed, there's videos on it, I'm putting new articles on there. Google ranks my website, will index my site every 3 hours. And so what's incredible is that if I put some content on my site within 3 hours, you can type up that content again, and Google has found it. And so everyone needs to have a site where they've got video content, where they've got conversations going on. People are spending more time on your site and also just having a conversation around the problem that you solve.
It's so true. It's so true because I did Google you earlier today, and it definitely came right up.
Right.
It does. It definitely does.
Even now, my stuff in Botswana, which doesn't even make any sense, that I'm seeing, if you type the word Botswana in business, like my page is coming up even higher than the government pages. You know,
wow.
That's just the power of using online marketing more effectively.
Oh yeah, you know, and that's my next question. You know, Jeremy, let's put a little question in here. I wanted to ask you something. I'm going to go back to the team business, but then I wanted to ask you another question. You know, Andrew, how does the team business camp play a role in the partnership with parents and teens? I would think it would strengthen it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because it's not really business I'm teaching. I'm really teaching life skills. I'm really teaching conflict resolution. I'm really teaching strategic planning, strategic thinking as well. And so there's a whole host of life skills that come into play that helps a teen navigate the difficulties. I mean, just the pressures that teens are under right now, it's incredible. We need to find ways for them to express their pain and then just give them a step-by-step plan on how to, release that pain and show them how they're going to be able to use that to be even a greater person in the future.
Well, one of the next questions that I had was, I was going to go into Botswana, but I think I'm going to change my question. You talked about something very powerful. A lot of people have people that do their social media for them, which I'm kind of in the same area of business that you are, Andrew. And I find that great, and I find it not so great. One of the things I love about you, Andrew, and I don't know how you do it, you have a family, you have things that you have to do, personally and professionally. Anytime anyone contacts you, you are so quick to respond, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, a direct email, or whatever. I have to ask you how you do that because, you're the man who's traveling all the time. You're advising, you're consulting, you're going to countries. Can you advise a business owner how you do it and what you do? Do you have people that work with you on your social media, or do you handle it all your own?
That's a great question. And to give you the interesting answer is that, and this isn't something I've deliberately positioned myself, but there are a lot of people who meet me, and I don't think I come across that this way, but people tell me after we become friends after a while, they say, Andrew, the first time I heard you speak, or the first time I met you, I was kind of scared to even contact you. So for some reason, I'm giving off a sense to a number of people that, don't contact me unless you're serious, which is kind of a good thing. So everyone thinks I'm extremely busy, which to some degree I am, but I do have a lot more free time than people realize only because I'm able to develop a lifestyle business. So I feel the first step is that you have to have a posture where people who contact you, and it goes back to against the grain of what some of my colleagues in Africa are doing, where it's a transactional relationship, where you're contacting me, I'm not looking to get to know you, I need to know how I can serve you and what's the transaction. That's the first thing. It's really how you position yourself in the marketplace. The next thing I do that my clients have teased me about is that I don't answer an email in more than, one or two sentences. I mean, people send me 4 or 5 paragraphs about X, Y, and Z, and I simply give them, here's a sentence, 1, 2 sentence. you know, and people kind of tease me. And then it's funny how when I do send you a long paragraph, people say, why, Andrew, you must have been mad. And they're probably right. So if I have to write out 3 or 4 paragraphs to you, I'm actually pretty upset. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as possible. So, you know, have a posture that people come to you for transactions. Number two is to just keep your responses brief. And number three is that you want to automate the process. And this is why I like to use Hootsuite.com. Or people think I'm always on Facebook. I'm always on Twitter. And so Hootsuite.com, that's Hootsuite.com. And I'll write tweets like on a Sunday, maybe 10 of them or so, and I'll simply let them go out on a regular basis. So ultimately, you need to allow social media to serve you. People have ranked me as one of the top social media experts to follow. And it was interesting. I was part of a story with Black Enterprise magazine. And out of all the 10 people, I had the lowest number of followers. So everyone else had like 30,000 or more followers on Twitter, where I only have like 4,000 followers. And what that speaks to is actually quality. And I've been very fortunate to have newspaper reporters and editors, people in the media who actually follow me because I'm always giving out good content. And so I want people to stop trying to sell and simply give out good content. By giving out good content, then people will want to engage you on social media.
As you know, Andrew, I have to just quantify that by saying absolutely. First of all, I use Hootsuite, and I absolutely love Hootsuite. It's excellent, and it's you can do it on a timely basis. It's great. The second thing, you know, I want to just say again to you for sharing this with our audience is that, you know, you're so on point. You know, it's not the amount of people. I know you're familiar, and Andrew, with Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yes.
And Gary is, you know, he's another one who's excellent with social media, but again, he says it has to work for you. Doesn't matter who it is, it's the influencer. It's the person that connects with you. Jay, I know that you had another question for him, so I don't want to hog up all the questions with Andrew.
I always wondered, Andrew, and I wanted to ask you this the time you were here before. I get a chance to ask you. Are marketing strategies are forever changing each year, or do you need to tune it up every 6 months?
That's a great question. You're really only tuning it up based upon customer attitudes, needs. You know, business is really all about timing, and you need to make sure that your marketing message is being delivered in the right package during the right time. My background is actually database marketing, and so you know, I built a big company in the past called Nia Direct, where we did direct mail marketing to consumers. And I lost a lot of money when Princess Diana died. I mean, when Princess Diana died, I was crying more than anybody else because I had just sent a mailing to 2 million people. So I just sent out a mailing to 2 million people 2 days before she died. And I knew that when there's a national tragedy or a global tragedy like that, people aren't responding to mail. People aren't buying things. All right? So you have to kind of just really have a good sense of the timing of your market. You know, if you're selling self-improvement products, the best time to sell it is January and September. Oftentimes, many entrepreneurs are struggling because they're in the wrong season. You know, you're wearing a winter jacket when it's actually the summertime. And so you have to make sure that you're in the right season with the right message. And that's why it needs to some degree, just be tweaked, be modified based on that.
Wow.
That is so interesting. That is so interesting. So I just wanted to add, Gail. So basically, the season is important. It's almost kind of have to be a forecaster. And it's kind of like you have to kind of know what's going on. And that's very interesting that you have to be careful when Princess Diane passed. It affected a lot of other products out there because everybody's focus is somewhere else. So I just thought that was great.
Yeah, that is excellent. You know, one of the things is, you know, as all of us here, you know, are in the marketing in some sort of way, how does your marketing advising for a small business, let's say, and a musical artist launching their career differ? And Andrew, if you wouldn't mind, this is a section where I would, if you wouldn't mind giving just like a little bit of you know, marketing example to, let's say, launch a small business and also a marketing example to launch a music artist, if they're the same or vastly different?
You know, they are different only to the extent that when it comes to music, you want to have, you know, when it comes to music, the hardest part is just finding a customer. And you know, that's the difficulty with all businesses. But music is even more difficult because it's not easy to find an email list of people who like your type of music. Now, what you could do is find other artists who are similar in genre and really begin to piggyback on them. But you know, I've worked with a couple of recording artists, and you know, let me kind of give you an overview of my approach to them. You know, first of all, I help all of my creative clients, whether they're music or writers, I help them to not get caught up with the gatekeeper. They're these gatekeepers. They're A&R folks. They're agents. They're publishers. They're production companies who finance movies, who actually have the power to green light your vision. And I like to put my clients in a position where you begin to green light your own project, because on a fundamental level, and I've even heard this from major gatekeepers in Hollywood, no one knows what a hit is. No one really knows. What they do know is how people respond to you. And so what you want to do, and go back to social media right now, because I've seen people, you know, they work their way up to the 50th floor to meet with this top executive, and as soon as they get there, the person wants to pull up your YouTube video. They want to look at your Twitter stream. And if you don't have that groundswell of support on the street, then you're never really going to make a deal. And so I felt my artists really focus on building a database. I make sure that they are available on iTunes and other online marketplaces like CD Baby. It's so amazing how many artists are trying to get this record deal, trying to get the perfect demo when they can start selling their own products on iTunes. In addition, they start to get a YouTube video plays, and then I help them to, you know, plan their own events in different venues. There's a real hunger for live music again. It's like the pendulum has swung back, and so I've helped artists do, you know, national and even international tours. And when we do those tours, you make sure you invite those A&R people who first turn you down. You invite some of those radio people. And when they begin to watch the crowd and see the crowd respond to your creativity, that's how a deal is made. You know, people don't realize that, you know, all of Tyler Perry's success was based on the fact that the folks from Lionsgate, who have funded all of his films, they were in his audience. And they sat back and they saw how people responded to the stage play. So you know what? We'll take a risk on this guy. And it wasn't even really a risk because he already had a built-in audience. And so my message to all my creative artists out there is let's greenlight your own success by building your database, by using YouTube, by using iTunes, by doing live shows, by doing merchandising, selling products, because you have to be in this game for a long time. It's like 20 years it takes to become an overnight success. And so just be committed to the process, and success will be yours.
And how does that differ from the launch of a small business, Andrew?
Right. A small business, you don't have to be as glamorous or as well-known. You don't have to really strive for publicity. You can really pick one or two interesting projects. You know, I was able to build, you know, a $5 million company just with 20 people, 20 people meaning 20 clients. These 20 clients happen to be brand managers of major packaged goods companies, and these 20 people each had a budget of almost $25 million each person. But a small business, you could become very, very focused. You can cherry pick and say, you know what, I'm going to deliver, you know, IT services to hospitals. And all you need to do is to develop an advisory board, the chief technical officer at various hospitals, listen carefully to what their needs are, listen carefully to their frustrations, and offer a custom solution. And so I have colleagues of mine who are doing $50 million, $100 million a year in business, and no one knows them because they operate under the radar screen. They work with a handful of people who have big budgets and big problems.
I love it. I love it. Andrew, this is why, you know, I have to say it like this, audience. I've known Andrew for 20 years. You are the man. There's a reason, you know, and I just want to say to our audiences, you know, this sounds easy for Andrew, but Andrew has worked very hard with his business to gain the insight and the experience, and he puts it into application. And I think that's really important. And, Andrew, I just want to acknowledge you again for the amazing work you've done with people in the community, people around the world.
Well, you know, thank you so much, because you and I, we go back to the Black Expo days. You remember me when I was just out of college. I'm going to these Black Expos around the cities, around the country. I can't even afford to stay in a hotel. I'm sleeping in hotel lobbies. I mastered the art of finding a big hotel, and I learned how to get 2 or 3 hours sleep in different sections, because the security guard would rotate. And I would go to one section of the hotel, get 3 or 4 hours sleep. Security guard would wake me up, and I would tell the security guard, oh, my roommate, he locked me out. I'm waiting for him to come back. And then I would go to a different section of the hotel, get another 3 or 4 hours sleep. Then I would shower in a local YMCA. And so you know, Gail, you know, as they say, you know, started from the bottom, and now we're here. But, you know, the key for everyone is that we all start from the bottom. And if you look at it, you know, there really is no bottom, meaning that the same values, the same skills that you have at the bottom, you still have them at the top. So you don't really change. I mean, people who've known me for a long time have known that I've been saying the same thing over and over again, just that now I have a larger platform or a different platform to play with. And so I want people to realize that as you begin to grow without, your growth within is really based upon you simply stepping out, reaching more, and serving more.
I just have to say you're inspiring. You always have been. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's great that I even get to share, you know, share you as a guest here with Jay and all of our audience, because it's, you know, as I said, you know, like you said, Andrew, we've done our time for a very long time. And it's, you have to keep at it. Jay has done his time for a very long time, and you can never give up on your dream. Jay, I know you had another question for Andrew as well.
Yes, I did. I had a question of back to the music thing, and I was just wondering, like, music artists needing to change their marketing plan every 3 months because of the music industry evolving, is that something that an artist needs to do? And the second part of that question is due to the fact that now that all of the corporations are downsizing in the music business, does that change your marketing plan, since there's fewer employees to do things and everything is so online and virtual?
Oh, yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, artists are now taking control of the marketing process. So, you know, just because you have a record deal, I've reminded several of my artists, that just means that you're about to go into debt, and you have to really be out there marketing your own brand more so than anything else. But you know, what's really changed, you know, when it comes to artists making money, you know, I've worked with, you know, A-list celebrities to artists who people don't hear about anymore, and my main thing is to make sure you're profitable, and you never know who's really making money. I mean, I know some A-list celebrities who are completely broke, cash flow negative, and they need to be in the news, and they can keep doing a bunch of, you know, foolish nonsense just to keep the name in the news. And there's some people who you're like, hey, how come I don't hear about, you know, that person anymore? That person is quietly touring the whole world, getting paid 10 grand a pop, you know, going to various colleges. That group that you don't hear anymore is actually, you know, working the corporate circuit right now. So I really help up-and-coming artists realize that let's just focus on the revenue. Don't focus so much on the fame, because a lot of people who are famous, but they're broke.
Right. Yes. Oh my goodness. Well, you know, one of the things, you know, as, you know, Jay is in the music industry, and as I go between the music industry, nonprofit, Fortune 500, and several other industries except finance, I can't stand finance. But, you know, one of the things I find, you know, because Yeah, it's just, I'm sorry. It's just, you know, Andrew, you have us thinking here. We, you know, we had questions for you, but you have us thinking, and that's a good thing. I'm going to go into my next question, Andrew, and this, and I think this is important, very important, about talking about writing and also being an expert. Would you mind sharing with us a little about the Write Your Book in 30 Days challenge and a little, and about a key to writing a book in 30 days and how people can get involved with your program around that?
Sure. You know, I like to issue challenges because many people are simply sitting on their gifts. They're sitting on their talents. You know, they say the graveyard is the most valuable place on the planet because there's so many treasures that went buried, you know, with the individual. You know, I serve as a deacon in my church, Abyssinian Baptist Church. You know, it's fairly large, and there's a funeral every week, you know. And as I get older, I just see my clients making a transition. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's at the funeral crying, but I'm mad. I want to take the coffin because I know about the book. I know about the movie. I know about the events. I know about all the stuff that you are fitting to do, but you never really got done. And so I like to create these challenges. I like to create intensive 3 days, intensive 30 days, get done 90 days, because time can become our greatest friend. Right now it's our greatest enemy because every moment of your life is being snatched away. You need to make sure that you maximize the time that's available to you. So write your book in 30 days. It's a Facebook group. Go on Facebook, type the words, write your book in 30 days. And notice how I named the group as a benefit. I want people to just, you know, capture that marketing lesson that when you name something, the most powerful name you can give to anything, whether it's your website, you know, it's a book, is a benefit. So I didn't say, you know, author circle. I said write your book in 30 days. So people who come to me are coming for a benefit to get a book done in 30 days. With no marketing, you know, we have almost like 3,000 people who are part of this group. Every 3 or 4 months, we issue another challenge. We'll be doing one in January as well, where it's basically a support group. And all of us need someone who will hold us accountable to our highest and best. And everything I do, I just simply try to raise the bar and encourage people to stretch out. It's not really even on faith. It's, you know, faith is a big word people use often, but it's really stretching out on what's already inside of you. It's really releasing what's inside of you, and the Write Your Book in 30 Days program really helps to make that happen. When it comes to a quick tip on how to get your book done, because keep in mind, I've got some people who the experts out there who have taken years to write their books. Some of them have challenged me online by saying, you know, this is a fraud. You can't get a book done in 30 days. I took 3 years to get my book done. And I tell people that the book I want you to write is a book that's already inside of you, that this is basically a nonfiction book. This is basically an expert book. And if you're a plumber, there's 101 things you know about plumbing. If you're an accountant, there are 101 things. And so the easy book I help my clients write is basically a tips book, where all you're simply doing is you're writing 57 ways to plan your next party. You're an event planner, let's write this book, because guess what? The purpose of the books I help my clients write is not to become a New York Times bestseller. The purpose of the book is to get you a contract, and you get the contract because you wrote the book.
Got it. Wow. Well, I don't think you could have been more clearer than that. We have one last question each for you, Andrew. Can you stay on with us for that one last question?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Well, the thing I had to ask you is, actually, no, I'm cheating, Andrew, there's three. One from me and Jade and one together. I wanted to know, could you share some of the history you learned while in Botswana and let people know where it's located, because some people don't know. And, you know, just some of the opportunity you saw there. I mean, I know you did a small business camp. You went with the people involved. But what did you see there as opportunity, not just for yourself, for everyone?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm planning to do, to answer your first question, when I mentioned to people Botswana, they say Bosnia? I said Botswana. They say Bots what? All right. So basically, as Americans, we definitely need to up our geographic skills. But Botswana is right above South Africa, all right? And so it's a landlocked country. When you have Namibia toward your left and Zimbabwe toward their right. And so it's right there above South Africa. Almost 80% of the economy is based on mining. Almost 80% of the economy is based upon government spending. You have a rising middle class. And so with this rising middle class, there's a huge demand for goods and services that meet the middle class. So this is why people say, well, Andrew, you know, what business should I start in Botswana? It's almost like, well, what business do you want to start? Because to a large degree, whatever concept works here in the U.S. is definitely going to work in Botswana. If you were to bring a vegetarian restaurant, you know, people say many Africans eat meat, but guess what? They're more vegetarians in Botswana, and also there are more expatriates moving there as well. So it's really, I mean, the only real challenge to doing business in Botswana is really you. You know, you have to first make a commitment to focus on one country. Then you got to, you know, invest in taking trips out there. Then you have to begin to develop some partnerships out there. But if you take the trips, develop the partnerships, the money is there to fund your dreams, and you just simply need to be ready for it.
Mm. And then the only second question, Jay, I have, and I know you have one, is we did ask you, I know you said you use Hootsuite as a person who, you know, because like I said, I mean, Andrew, we don't know how you do it. I know you use Hootsuite, but do you have people, do you have like this huge staff that works with you? Because it seems like it. You do a great job at what you do.
Yeah, thanks. No, I mean, at one point I had a much larger organization, but now I have a number of freelancers who work with me on various projects. You know, I tell people that the leading cause of death in America is heart disease, but the leading cause of death for entrepreneurs is overhead. And people want to make sure they keep their overhead as low as possible, and I bring on different freelancers to work on different projects. And so when it comes to the social media, you know, that's something I really do myself based upon my own time.
Okay, got it. Well, you do an amazing job. And I know, Jay, you had one last question.
Yeah, this is a question me and Gail kind of had. We just wanted to know, last but not least, how long did it take to get there? And was the food good on the plane? Did you get to taste the cuisine of the country on the way there? And did you have to taste American food on the way back? I'm just wondering. That's kind of my funny question for you to let us know, because I just wanted to know how many hours it took and how was the food.
Right, yeah. So it's basically 20 hours to get there. One flight, well, it's really two flights. One flight to South Africa is approximately 14 hours, and then you have to get another flight to from South Africa to Botswana, which is like an hour. So between transfers, you're there in approximately 20 hours. The food to me, you know, is pretty good. The key though is to make sure you sleep on the plane and you time your sleep to kind of begin to match the waking hours in the country you're about to visit. And also, you know, make sure you don't go to bed, you know, when you land. Be careful about that, because then you'll be up all night for a while. So, and also, I'll say the biggest thing is to make sure you exercise a lot while you're on the plane. You know, walk up and down, you know, stretch, and also drink lots of water.
Yeah, well, at least I'm glad I did do something right based on what you just said. Andrew, you know, Jay and I have to ask you, is there anything you don't know? Because, I mean, you know, it's just amazing. We just love having you here. And you know we're going to ask you back the middle of next year if that's okay with you.
Sure, absolutely. I don't know enough about Renaissance era painting. So I'm looking to beef up my knowledge of the Renaissance area and those painting. But I just get to, you know, read a lot. You know, I'm devouring a book a week. And if you look at the average American only reads one book a year, it's not hard to be the smartest in your class. Just start reading a lot more. I mean, just read, you know. That's really the key. Readers are leaders. That's my motto.
Well, you know, Jay and I are definitely readers, and we ensure that our family is too. All I can say is, Andrew, I hope you enjoyed yourself on the show today. And
thank you. Had a great time.
Yes, and can you share with people where they can find you?
Sure. You can find me at smallbusinesscamp.com. That's smallbusinesscamp.com. And also at Twitter and also Instagram, the number 2, Andrew Morrison. That's the number 2, not T-W-O, but the number 2, Andrew Morrison, on Twitter and Instagram.
Well, everyone, we're going to tune out. Jay, Andrew, it's been a blast. I hope everyone enjoyed Andrew. We'll have one more show before the end of the year, and we'll take it out. Merry Christmas, everyone. Bye-bye.
Take care.